Football on Off the Ball
with Paddy Power, the greatest football partnership since Shearer and Owen.
Hey, welcome back. It's Thursday's Off the Ball and it's coming up at 7:30. So John Giles is with us on the line. Evening, John.
Evening, Nathan.
So we have a bit of a treat coming up. John is going to pick his all-time Leeds United 11 in just a couple of moments. Unfortunately, though, John, we're starting once again this week with some very sad news. Another one of your former Leeds United teammates passing away. Trevor Cherry died yesterday, quite suddenly, it seems, as well, at the age of 72. Teammate of yours in that title-winning side of 1974. And coming so soon as well after the passing of Norman Hunter less than a fortnight ago, like you spoke about that bond of brothers at that stage, of that team at Leeds United. I'd imagine it's very difficult times at the moment for yourself and all those Leeds players.
Well, it's hard to take, Nathan. Eddie rang me yesterday and said, more bad news. Jerry. And I assumed it was the virus.
Mm.
But it wasn't, actually. It was a heart attack. And, Terry's... very, very fit lad, Trevor. You know, I saw him at Christmas time when we were having to do for Leeds and always looked well, younger than most of us. Just can't believe it, Nathan. Very, very sad.
Reading the tributes to him today, like a lot of those Leeds players, a very tough man on the pitch, but a very different character off it, it seemed.
Yeah, well, he could get stuck in like most defenders in those days. Could do his job. They always do a reliable job for you, Nathan. You know, he came to our team after we won the Cup in 1972, and I think Jack was on his way out. Mm. Terry Cooper had been injured, and he played a lot of positions for Leeds. Obviously, when I left, he was there for a few more years. But very, very reliable lad, reliable player, reliable person.
He was among those paying tribute to Norman Hunter a couple of weeks ago and saying how when he was with Huddersfield that he used to be sent by his manager Ian Greaves to Elland Road to watch Norman Hunter and learn from Norman Hunter, and then he goes and he ends up playing alongside him for many years as well. When he came in 1972, that was already a successful side, and as you say, maybe it was with a plan eventually to take over from Jack Charlton. Like, they were some big boots he had to fill. What are your memories of how he was able to settle into that group?
Yeah, well, he didn't have... Actually, I think Don had decided that Jack was finished, and he brought two players. They were called Roy Ellum, who had been sent a half at Huddersfield, so he brought Roy Ellum and Trevor at that time. And I think he told Jack like he was on his way out, but Roy didn't do very well, and they brought Jack. Don then brought Jack back into the team, but Trevor settled into it well. I think he played most of his game for us at left back. Terry Cooper had been injured. He got a bad injury, Terry, and Trevor was stepping in for him. And then we had Frank Gray coming into the team at left back as well, which was Eddie's brother. But Trevor played a lot of matches. He was versatile in that he could play across any of the defensive positions, Nathan. But left back was his original position when he came to Leeds.
Mm.
But very reliable lad playing.
And you say that bond that you had, and while you didn't see each other as much as you would have liked, at least you had that moment over Christmas when players were getting the freedom of the city and all the Leeds United players as well were brought back for the centenary of the club, that actually you did get together as a group quite recently.
Yeah, well, that was it. That's the shock in it, you know. Obviously, Norman looked well, Trevor looked well, and now we get to this stage. Norman, as we know, passed away with the virus. Again, I said, look, when Eddie rang me yesterday, I assumed it was the virus, but he said no. It was a heart attack, so, it's just a shock, Nathan. Yeah.
Yeah, well, our sympathies to everybody who was close to him. How are you keeping, John? We get a lot of messages in every week, and any time I'm talking to somebody on the phone, one of the first things they ask is, how's John keeping? How are you getting through this?
I'm keeping out of the way, Nathan. I must be honest, I'm terrified of it.
Right.
I'm in Birmingham, so I can go out for a walk every day, and I make sure I walk to the other side of the road if somebody's approaching or coming behind. So I'm actually terrified of it, but I'm keeping okay. Getting the walk in and living in my good lady and myself and the kids who come up, two kids living near us in Birmingham, bring the shopping up, but don't come in. So we're doing everything we possibly can to keep away from it.
You don't strike me, John, as somebody who's been terrified too many times in his life.
Well, this is something you can't do anything, really do anything about, Nathan, you know.
Yeah.
as we all know, and a lot of people know, it's just a dreadful situation. But anyway, we'll do our best to get through it.
Yeah, are you someone who's addicted to the news at the moment, constantly checking what's going on, or do you want to just try and switch off from it as much as possible?
Well, I switch off as much as possible, Nathan. You know, like you hear different things on the television, and I get a bit fed up with it, to be honest, at times. You know, they talk about the coming back from, I'm talking about England now, you know, coming back from the lockdown and all that, and they put a date on it, which I think is silly. It is what it is, and it's not going to go away because anybody's putting a date on it. But again, I know from a personal point, just trying to do all the right things and follow the instructions.
There does seem to be a real push from the British government to try and get football back, that this isn't the Premier League going off on a solo run because of the huge, obviously, financial implications, that the government are very much behind this Project Restart to try and get football back in the middle of June, maybe so people have some sort of a sense of normality. We haven't heard a huge amount from players so far as to how willing they will be to go back when it comes to it. Obviously, they're taking pay cuts, and again, because of the sheer financial stakes that are at play here, maybe most of them won't really have a choice. Do you feel players should be put in a position that in the middle of a pandemic, when we're still not quite sure of so many different parts of this, and like the death rate is still huge on a daily basis in England, that we should even be talking about football coming back?
Well, I think they'll talk about it. The government will talk about it because they want something good going out there and a bit of hope for people, Nathan. I think it's premature. You know, what they're talking about is playing behind closed doors. But then you get the problem. One problem is the players playing on the pitch. You know, you're going to have close marking. And what happens if a player does test positive for it, then like the two teams have to be off from it. I can't see it. Now, the thing is, I know there's a lot of money involved in it, and they want to get the matches played and all that. But again, I think it's, you know, you're risking lives when you do it. There's no doubt about that, and I don't think it's worth it. And I think it'll be a while before. I'd really think it's a while before they get it back, Nathan. Myself, I think don't think it'll be as quick as they're talking about now.
No, it really is hard to see at the moment. And at the same time, what's the rush? That they can continue in August, September, and if you take away the financial side of it, what's the reasoning?
Yeah, it's too dangerous. Mm. You know, like they're talking about in England here, the lockdown, you know, letting people out and do certain things, and I think what you get is another dose of this again. But I don't think it's feasible for the football. I mean, everybody'd love to have it back, especially the clubs, because there's a lot of money at stake, and there's a lot of money at stake for businesses and that. But you can't hurry this thing along. You know, it is what it is, and you have to take the right steps. And if they don't continue the right steps, I think they're doing the right steps now. But if they come back on that, Nathan, then you get more deaths, and then you have to start all over again. You can't put a date on this particular thing.
Mm. Well, speaking of distractions, what's been a very good distraction for people and has been getting a great response over the past 5 or 6 weeks is every Thursday night you've been picking your all-time 11s from a variety of different clubs. We've been through Liverpool, Manchester United, Chelsea, Tottenham, Arsenal. And today we get to one that everybody's been waiting for, John, which is your very own Leeds United. So you're going to pick your all-time Leeds 11. And really there's been three periods of success for Leeds United, because it's a club that really, until Don Revie arrived, never had a great history. It goes on and has that decade while you're there of unbelievable success, winning league titles, getting to a European Cup final, winning FA Cups and competing year in, year out. There's the group that won the league in the early 90s, and then David O'Leary's side that got to a Champions League semi-final and went so close to winning quite a few trophies. So there's quite a few generations there for you to choose from.
There is, Nathan, and It's never easy picking these teams, but I mean, apart from one player, which is the goalkeeper Nigel Martin, I've picked the lads that I played with.
Right.
Now I'll explain this. I know they've been very, very good players. They did go on to win the league with Howard Wilkinson in 1990. You know, with Gordon Strachan and Gary McCulloch, Gary Speed, David Batty, Tony Rigo, Chris White, a lot of terrific, Chris Fairclough, terrific players. But the reason I picked all the lads from my time was because they did it for at least 11 years, Aidan.
Yeah.
But it's a while back. But they put Leeds on the map from a team that didn't have a terrific history. They weren't a traditional team like Manchester United, Manchester City, Liverpool. When Shankly took over Liverpool, they were in the second division. But he did have a history that when he did get them going, that the crowds were back in that. And so did Jock Steen and Bill Nicholson. Don Revie didn't have that. So he had to build a team from scratch, which went on to do, for at least 11 years. So I'm making my apology before I start. So I'm picking Nigel Martin in goal.
Okay, so Nigel Martin is one of the more modern players in this Leeds United side. Why Martin ahead of the goalkeepers from your era?
Well, we had Gary Sprake, who started off his career as a terrific goalkeeper, Nathan. I think he lost his nerve somewhere along the way and made quite a few mistakes before David Harvey came into the team. So I would rule Gary Sprake on that. He was very good in the early days when we got promotion, and he was a regular. He was a very, very talented individual. But I think he lost his nerve when he started to make mistakes, and Don stayed with him a long time and cost us quite a few trophies, I must say, at the time. So David Harvey then came into the team, who was a solid goalkeeper, very steady, didn't make mistakes. So I put Nigel Martin. I think he was an outstanding goalkeeper for Leeds at the time he was there. So I put him in goal instead of the two lads I played with most of the time.
On Gary Sprake then, when things weren't going well at that period, and maybe there was a loss of trust from the outfield players for what he could do, was that communicated to Don Revie? Like, did he understand that the players felt that this was a weak link, or was there a bit of a blind spot with the goalkeeping position?
Well, it was his decision, Nathan. Well, I felt as a player, if I never interfered or tried to influence Don Revie in any way. And in fact, I don't think he would have been influenced. I think he'd know through Big Jack and Jack making faces and calling Gary Sprake a good few names and that. I think he knew how he felt. But my take on it is with Gary Sprake, Don was a man who put a lot of emphasis on loyalty, right? So when Don took over Leeds first, he wasn't doing very well, Nathan. And in fact, he was doing poorly. So he decided at one stage, I think it was against Swansea, to take a gamble and put a few of the young lads in. And one of them was Gary Sprake, Paul Reaney, Norman Hunter, probably Terry Cooper, Paul Madeley. He put a lot of young lads in it, and they started to do well. And Gary Sprake was very, very good. He's an outstanding goalkeeper. So when the time came after a few years where he wasn't doing it, I think Don felt that he owed him some loyalty to keep him in the team. That's what I believe. And it got to the stage where we played a semi-final of the Cup in 1972 against Birmingham, and he dropped Gary that day.
Right.
Dropped him and put David Harvey in, and he never got back in the team again.
Okay. So Gary Sprake,
that's what I believe. He was a very talented goalkeeper, there's no doubt about that, but he did get to the stage where he made a lot of mistakes for us, Nathan.
So Nigel Martin is the goalkeeper, 7 years at the club, and part of that David O'Leary side as well that did so well in European football. Your back four then?
My back four is Paul Reaney, Jack Charlton, Norman Hunter and Paul Madeley.
Was that a straightforward selection for that back four?
No, it was because Terry Cooper comes into it.
Mm.
You know, Terry unfortunately did get an injury 2 or 3 years before he left the club. But Terry was... Like the reason I put Paul Madeley in, because he never had any really regular position, but he could play in many positions, Nathan, that if somebody's picking to me, if I go to Dublin and say, I'll pick the Leeds team for you, Terry Cooper will always be in it, and Paul Madeley is never in it.
Right.
Because he didn't have a regular position.
He was the Gary Breen, a team of Paul Madeleys, because he played in every position, it seems, aside from goalkeeper, played as a striker in the 68 League Cup final against Arsenal, scored the only goal?
I don't think so.
No.
We beat Arsenal 1-0. Terry Cooper scored that goal. He played centre-forward a couple of times for us, Nathan. But he was so versatile, he played in the middle of the field, and he'd wear number 11 and number 7, but he never actually played on the wings.
Right.
But he right back, any of the centre back positions, midfield. He was just so versatile that when, as I said, when people are picking the best team for me, when I'm in Dublin, he's never in it. So I put him in at left back because he was as good at left back because Terry Cooper had been injured for a couple of seasons, and he played there on a fairly regular basis.
I know the transfer market wasn't anywhere near what it is today, but it is incredible how many games that back four played for the club. Paul Reaney, 750 appearances. Jack Charlton, all-time record at 773. Paul Madeley, in a variety of different positions, over 700 appearances as well. Norman Hunter, over, like, every single one of those players, over 700 appearances for the club.
Yeah, well, that's why I have to pick them, Nathan, regardless of, I know the terrific players came afterwards, like, Rio Ferdinand and lots of players like, not lots of players like him, but Gordon Strachan, Gary Ballister. These were terrific players, and I don't mean to be disrespectful to them, but these lads, like, I'm one of the lesser ones. I only made 525 appearances.
What were you doing?
So I was there late, Norman and I played from, well, Jack was there all his career. Mm. See, I came when I was 22. So I was three or four years behind, Billy Bremner and Norman Hunter and that. But it shows you the times they were, how long they were at the club and how many games they played. Nathan, that I find it very difficult to put anybody else in. That a lot of people might think, well, they should be in them, and that happens when you're picking a team. But these lads did it for so long and were so successful over a long period of time, Nathan. You know, the only time other trophy they won was with under Howard Wilkinson, and that was win the league, I think, in, 1992.
Yeah.
You know, but when these lads played, if you go back under career, and I'll just do a little bit, I don't want to bore you, two league titles between at 69 and 74, one FA Cup in 68, two First Cups in 68 and 71, one League Cup in 68, promotion in 63, 64, three FA Cup finals, five second in the league, finalists in the European Cup, the First Cup, the Cup Winners' Cup. So we won a lot of trophies, and people say, oh, we should have won a lot more than we did. But we were there year in and year out, and mostly with the same players, Nathan. You know, so that's why I feel obliged to have to pick all the lads that I played with. And I don't want to be disrespectful to some of the other terrific players that played for Leeds later on.
The should have won more argument, because you've gone through some of the roll of honour there of that team, of a couple of league titles, FA Cup, League Cup, but there's five runners up in the league in that decade. There's three beaten FA Cup finals, lost a European Cup final, a UEFA Cup Winners' Cup final. Hey, was it a team that should have achieved more, or a team that was just unfortunate not to win more?
It's difficult to know, Nathan. You know, like, Shankly had a great record at Liverpool, right? Mm. We won as many, same amount of major trophies as Bill Shankly. But when you get to the final of competitions, like, for your record and your reputation, you'd be better off not getting to the cup finals.
Mm.
Do you know what I mean? Because if you don't get to the cup final, you don't lose it. But we were getting there all the time, year in, year out, year in and year out. Like Manchester City, for example, I think won the league in 68, the Cup in 69, the Cup Winners' Cup in 70, and the League Cup in 70. So they won four trophies like in three seasons, right? But they were gone, Nathan.
Yeah.
You know, we did it for 11 years. You know, week in, week out, week in, week out, and losing to Sunderland, which was a disgrace, and then coming back to go 29 games unbeaten in the league to go on and win the league the following year. So, of course, you could look and say, yeah, they could have won more, should have won more. But you had to get there in the final to be runners-up.
Mm.
And it took a bit of doing to do that. We're never out of the top four for 10 seasons, Nathan.
Jack Charlton, alongside Norman Hunter at centre-half, obviously,
yeah,
so many of our conversations around Jack Charlton are around his time as Ireland manager. In terms of how good a player he was and been the centre-back in that England World Cup winning side in 1966, in that generation, and you often talk about the defenders of that generation, how good was he? Where did he rank?
I'd say Jack was the best centre-half in what was the first division in those days for 5 years.
Right. What sort of player was he?
He was a big centre half who weren't expected to get on the ball much in those days, Nathan. And the pitches were bad and all that carry on. But Jack was a good header of the ball. He read it quite well, and he was deceptively quick. He was a big, lanky fella, as you know, and could cover the ground well, really well. So he was the best centre half for at least five seasons in what was then the First Division. He was quick. He was deceptively quick. You know, if somebody if it was a ball over the top and it was going down the line, he was very seldom beaten for pace. Looked a bit awkward, but could cover the ground. Good in the air, and good on both feet, Nathan, for clearing the ball.
Yeah,
he was good on his left side and his right side to get it away.
Did winning the World Cup change him at all?
No, he never ever bought a drink. So that never changed him.
No. Yeah, well, what's the old story here that when he was in the pub, he'd write a check, and because he was so famous, nobody'd ever cash it?
That's right. Yeah, I heard that. I'd say it was true, too. Jack was always, we were on a night out. A couple of lads warned me when I first got there. He says, be careful when you go out. He said, Jack will tap you up. and he did, but he never paid it back. You had to get used to him, you know.
Yeah,
Jack, now, Jack, have you got a fiver on you?
Yeah.
I don't have a look, Jack. No, I haven't, no.
Yeah,
and then he'd say, oh, okay. But
when he's towering over you, you couldn't really question him too much.
Well, you didn't want to, especially when he caught the new guys.
Yeah.
You know, he'd always catch the new guys. We never thought anything of it, to be quite honest.
Yeah.
But you never did with Jack anyway. That's the way he was.
All right, so the goalkeeper, Nigel Martin, the back four, Paul Reaney, Jack Charlton, Norman Hunter and Paul Madeley. We need to take a quick break, John, and we'll get on to the midfield then.
Football on Off the Ball.
With Paddy Power. The greatest football partnership since Shearer and Owen.
All right, welcome back. John Giles is still with us on the line. He's picking his all-time Leeds United 11. John, I was looking around online earlier today and there have been many all-time Leeds 11 picked over the last few decades, including by the club themselves, and you're in every single one of them. So we'll forgive you if you want to put yourself in midfield in this one.
No, I don't. No, I don't. I'd rather talk about the other players, Nathan.
We'll have to have a twelfth man then in this team because,
as I say,
I think all Leeds supporters would most definitely have you in there.
So, well, that'd be very good. But self-praise is no recommendation, then, Nathan. No, I appreciate that, but I'd rather pick the team.
So who is your midfielder?
Well, I've got Billy Bremner, of course, and Bobby Collins.
Okay. So yourself, Bobby Collins and Billy Bremner, when you arrived at the club, did the three of you play in the midfield together?
Yeah. Yeah, when I first went, I left Manchester United in 63, and Bobby Collins was already there, a year or two before that. So I was playing on the right, well, mostly on the right side, but right side of midfield, Bobby Collins and Billy.
Three
midgets.
But you could pack a bit of a punch, I think it was fair to say. And like Bobby Collins, Don Revie would say, was in many ways his best signing because it was a player he needed at that time to set the agenda for what he wanted Leeds to be. And it seemed he was an incredibly tough player. And the people's perception of Leeds seemed to change when Bobby Collins came to the club.
He was a great player. He was a hero of mine because he was a great player for Celtic for 10 years.
Okay.
And when I was a kid, the Celtic League used to come over every 2 years. And Bobby Collins was always in that team. That was a great Celtic player. And then he came to Everton when he was 27, and I think he was there for 5 years. And then came to Leeds when he was 32. Bobby Collins started the great team, the great club, and winning club at Leeds, in my opinion. He was a great attitude. There's an old saying in football: if you get an experienced player in the club, he's great for the club. If you get an experienced player who's not of the right character, it's bad for the club. Bobby Collins was a great character in terms of match in, match out, training. He set an example for all the young players at Leeds at that time. And I was a bit old. I was 22 when I came to Leeds. But Norman Hunter, Paul Madeley, Terry Cooper, Paul Reaney, he set the trend for that club in a big way. He was huge. And he was a great mentor for me. I came from Manchester United. I played on the right wing, but I was always a midfield player. But I was only 22, so I think 2 or 3 years with Bobby Collins. And when Bobby Collins got injured, I moved into his position. But I was ready to do it then, Nathan, because I learned so much from him. But he set the trend, there's no doubt. That was the major signing for Leeds. And one of the reasons I went to Leeds for Manchester United is because they were then in the second division. Because I knew if Bobby Collins was there, they're doing something right.
Right.
And he was great.
And all that you learned from him, was that from watching him and the way he behaved? Or would you sit down and talk football and talk about his philosophy and try and pick apart what he knew?
No, I just watched him.
Right.
I just watched him, Nathan. I was always a midfield player. I played Manchester United on the right wing because I had to. And Don Revie signed me as a right winger. But I was always a wanted to be a midfield player. But he was a great influence. I didn't talk to Bobby much about football at all, but I watched him. I played with him. I saw what he did. I saw his attitude to training, his attitude to playing. You know, was top class.
Generally, when these teams are picked, it is yourself and Billy Bremner, obviously, who are the midfield partnership. How long did it take yourself and Bremner to forge an understanding where, like, it seemed one of you always knew what the other one was doing on the pitch at all times? Like, you've touched on this before, that if one went forward, one stayed back, that there was just this sort of telepathic understanding. How long on the pitch together did it take for that understanding to come about?
5 minutes.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah. When Billy was a natural footballer, and I think I was a natural footballer, and you just know what the player's going to do and what you're going to do and that, Nathan. You can't practice it, you know. There's nothing in football you can have the practice ground, because when you're playing in a match, you know, things happen that you don't expect to happen all the time because you're playing against the opposition. So you have to adjust to it straight away, right? And the main thing is playing in the middle of the field, I found anyway, as a midfield player, that if you're in a tight situation, can you get out of it? You know, because like Billy Bremner, anybody else can't tell me if I'm in a tight situation. Well, they can't, to make a position to receive the ball. But you have to get out of it. And the same with Billy. And luckily enough, between and Bobby Collins, if you were in a tight situation, we'd get out of it and then we go and play. But when you're playing with good players, great players like Collins and Bremner, you can't practice anything. Well, you can, but you don't have to practice anything, Nathan. It happens instinctively. And that's what makes really good players. You know, you find Messi playing now. Messi got, but a lot of time Messi in a tight situation doesn't know what he's going to do when he gets the ball. But he works it out very quickly. That's what, and bad players don't work anything out. Whereas Bremner and myself, we were near each other in the middle of the field. Of course, when he saw me in trouble, he'd get close to me. We were close to me to play a little 1-2, and now you're out of it. But that's instinctive as well. Like, you can't practice it now. You can't go on the pitch with your colleagues or the people you want to play and say, look, this is what we're going to do.
Yeah.
And we want you to try and stop it. Because when you get on the pitch to play, you don't know what you're going to do a lot of the time when the ball comes. A lot of times you do, which is pretty straightforward. But a lot of times you don't. But we just had this, Billy and myself just had this natural instinctive thing to do. When he was in trouble, I'd be near him and vice versa. And Billy's control was terrific. You know, he scored an awful lot of them, but he was a great player. He was the most confident player I ever played with, Nathan.
Right. Arrogant?
Well, he could be.
Right.
But he could do it.
Yeah, he could back it up.
He could back it up. But in the dressing room beforehand, Billy was always going to be the star player in his head.
Okay.
Always. And a lot of the times he was, Nathan. But very, 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 very confident. Very, very confident lad. Bit of a show-off, but could do it.
And how did that sit with you then, playing alongside him in midfield?
I had no problem with him. I never bothered whether I was going to be the star. I wasn't going to be the star, Nathan. But the thing is, Billy produced. I didn't mind. I didn't care. Like, Billy was cocky. I wasn't cocky. I would be confident, but I wouldn't be cocky. Billy was cocky, but he produced, Nathan. I mean, if he was cocky and didn't produce, then you could say he's a bit of a spoofer. Reproduced all the time.
There's obviously a certain amount of footage of that era, and people have seen bits and pieces of Billy Bremner. What was his greatest strength as a player?
Well, first of all, his confidence. He was always going to play well, and he had an ability, I think, to score important goals, terrific goals, in important matches.
Right.
I think three of the semi-finals we got to, he scored the winning goals in three of them. He scored at Wembley in the first cup final we played in. Semi-finals, I think he scored three goals in semi-finals we won. Bremner and I scored 115 goals each night, in from midfield.
Yeah, it's incredible.
And he scored more spectacular goals than I did. But he just didn't do it when you were winning 3-0 or 4-0. He was doing it in big matches where they really counted.
We better move on time-wise.
Okay.
Who else is in your midfield?
That's it. Two midfield.
With those two, that's all you needed.
That's all we needed.
So we're going all out then, because there was a lot of great attacking players of that Leeds generation as well.
Yeah.
Who have you gone with?
I've gone with Peter Lorimer.
Okay.
On the right, Alan Clark and Mick Jones up front.
Yep.
And Eddie Gray on the left wing, on the left side.
Talk to me about Eddie Gray then, as a player, and what type of player he was. Scored a lot of goals, made a huge amount of appearances for Leeds as well down through the years, and is always ranked highly when you're talking about their greatest ever players. What sort of player was Eddie Gray?
Eddie was originally a midfield player, left-footed lad, great control. And because Billy Bremner and I were playing in midfield, Tom played him on the left wing. And he was a brilliant dribbler. Like Leeds used to call him the Leeds George Best.
Okay.
He had a lot of injuries, Nathan, actually, in his time with us. He had a lot of serious injuries, but came back from, again, a terrific lad, Eddie, with great control. He could go past people. You only had to get the ball out to Eddie, and he was on his way. But like they used to say in those days, wingers are brainless wingers. Eddie was anything but. He was a very, very intelligent player who was playing on the left wing, Nathan. Great control and could go past people and make goals, score goals, and a great attitude to it as well.
Don Reavy said of Eddie Gray, if he played on snow, he wouldn't leave footprints.
Well, that's true. He was quite a big lad, Eddie. But deceptively quick, but great control of the ball. And could go past people. Like nowadays, you don't get many wingers, Nathan. And if you do, there's not many going past people, you know. Whereas if you were playing like good play, usually goes out to the wingers, and you get it out to Eddie, and he'd do his stuff. He'd take the fullback on straight away. He was complete opposite to Peter. You know, Peter scored 270 goals from Leeds from the right side. Sort of winger, right side midfield, right side, and he was a natural striker, Peter, but he played on the right wing because that's the only way he could get in the team. And he scored, but Peter could score as many goals and maybe more. He scored more than Eddie, and sometimes would make more because he didn't have to beat somebody, Nathan. He would come up the left back and he'd get a cross in. He was a beautiful crosser of the ball, kick of the ball in his right foot. So he didn't actually have to beat anybody to get good crosses in for Mick Jones and Alan Clark in those days.
Both Eddie Gray and Peter Lorimer were score of great goals as well. I was watching some goals from Eddie Gray earlier today. One he scored against Burnley, where he must have dinked in and out about six times before smashing a shot past the keeper.
Somebody said he beat half the people at the game. It was a fantastic goal, though, wasn't it, Nathan? You know, he just beat them, and they had somebody on the ground. He was brilliant. Peter was the opposite. Peter didn't have to. He'd only made half a yard on the left back, and he whizzed them in with his right foot. He was a great kicker of the ball on his right foot. Scored important goals.
Alan Clark scored over 100 goals for the club as well. It was a British transfer record when he came to Leeds from Leicester at the time in 1969. There must have been a lot expected of him then.
Well, Alan will tell you it was a bargain. He's one of the most confident lads I ever met in my life.
Right.
Yeah, and he was very arrogant, Nathan. Very arrogant about his play, and this arrogance pays off, and is a good thing when you're a striker.
Mm.
You know what I mean? Like, for example, now he played with Mick Jones. Now if Alan Clark missed a chance, and any of us said, "Alan, come on," he'd tell you to F off. But if there was another chance, he'd score it. Mick Jones was a much more gentle type of lad, and if Mick missed a chance and you got on to him, he'd get his head down a bit. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So Alan would be more likely to score. If he missed the chance, he'd be more likely to score for the next chance than Mick would. Now, Mick scored a lot of goals as well. He was a great lad. He wasn't arrogant at all. Alan had this arrogance about him that he wouldn't care what you said to him. If he missed two chances, he'd still be up for the next chance. Terrific finisher. They were a good combination because Mick was a real worker, you know. Mick was a good, good worker all over the place. Scored a lot of goals, but he wouldn't be confident. He said, well, I met very few players that had the confidence that Alan Clark had anyway.
Did you like that confidence? Did you like your striker to have that confidence that no matter what went wrong, he always believed
well,
the next time
he'd go
right?
Well, I told him off a few times, Nathan. A few times. Not me. Quite a few of the lads did. But with his arrogance. But of course, if he's producing, then you don't hold it. It's not personal or anything. The main thing's on the pitch is doing what you have to do, which is score goals, which he did. Right? But sometimes his manner now wouldn't be the best.
And was Mick Jones very much aware that his job was to sort of do the dirty work for Alan Clark and accepting of that?
And prepared to do it. Right. He was one of the most modest lads you ever met, Mick. He was a terrific lad. Scored his fair share of goals, Nathan, as well. Mm. But he was a real worker. He was a real worker.
The team then, Nigel Martin in goals, Paul Reaney, Jack Charlton, Norman Hunter, Paul Madeley, Peter Larmour, Billy Bremner, Bobby Collins, Alan Clark, Mick Jones and Eddie Gray. And John Giles thrown in there somewhere into the mix as well when we're talking about Leeds' greatest ever 11. We'd actually wanted to talk because like the key to all of that, of course, John, was Don Revie and to dedicate quite a bit of time to all that. Unfortunately, we don't have time this evening, but I know the plan when we're finished doing these 11s is we're going to talk about some of the great managers over the last 50, 60 years. So we're going to dedicate an entire evening to talking about Don Revie and his genius. So we'll get to that. But I know there are other players who didn't quite make it but were close that you wanted to give a mention to as well.
There was a few who did contribute in a big way. When we got promotion, for example, I called Jim Storey, Don Weston, Albert Johansson, Ian Lawson and Freddie Goodwin contributed to getting promotion. When we were in our glory days, later on, Joe Jordan, Frankie Gray, Terry Cooper, of course, was there, David Harvey in goals, Gordon McQueen, Terry Yorath, Mick Bates, the late Trevor Cherry, Gary Sprague, Roy Ellum and Rod Delfitt in my time.
One who came up a lot, but actually we should point out that this is from 1960 onwards, generally is what we've been doing, is John Charles, who's a player I know you've spoken about a lot, has been an incredible striker and had a brilliant record at Leeds, but generally in the 50s.
Yeah, he left in 58. Mm. So usually when we're doing this, Nathan, we're going back to 1960. But John Charles, one of the best players I've ever seen. He was a huge, big man. He went to Juventus.
Yeah.
And apparently, like 10 years or 15 years after he finished playing, if he walked down in the city there, they'd mob him.
Mm.
He was one of the best players I've ever seen. He was about 6'3", Nathan, but he had the touch of a little fella.
Right.
You know, his control was fantastic. He was quick. I think the season before he went to Italy, I think he scored 42 goals for Leeds in a team that just avoided relegation.
Wow.
He was brilliant. I don't know what it'd be worth. It'd be worth at least 200 million today.
Just give us then, John, of the more modern generation, just give us one name who might have been able to force of the last sort of 20, 25 years of Leeds. Who's the best player you've seen there?
At Leeds.
At Leeds, yeah.
Oh, God.
I put you on the spot now.
It is. That's a big spot because... Like Norman Hunter was the best defender I ever played with. Billy was the Billy and Bobby Collins, but Billy a lot longer. Eddie Gray. I could only give it to you in positions.
Right.
You know, defender, Norman, midfield, Billy, striker. Probably Peter Lorimer.
Right.
Peter scored 270 goals for Leeds from the wing. And it's hard to make choices, to be honest, with the players I played with there.
Yeah.
Nathan, but I can't pick any one player because they were so good in so many different positions.
That was the opportunity, John, to just pick yourself.
No.
John, it's been brilliant chatting to you, and I know a lot of people were looking forward to hearing what your all-time Leeds 11. Funny, when the club did their all-time Leeds 11 about a decade ago, it was pretty much the exact same team except you were in it. Nigel Martin was the only modern day player to get in. The other 10
we had a night at Leeds for that. And I was at that particular night, yeah. But I hate being disrespectful to, you know, Gordon Strachan, Mike Allister, you know, the players that played at that particular speed, David Paddy. These were terrific players, and I feel a bit awkward picking all the teams, but it's just because we did it over such a long period of time, and we're the first team to set really Leeds as one of the major clubs.
Yeah, he certainly did that. John, great stuff as always. We'll talk to you next Thursday.
Thanks, Nathan.
All right, that was John Giles picking his all-time Leeds 11. If you missed any of that, it'll all be up on offtheball.com and you can watch it back on our YouTube channel or download the Goal Out app and you can check out the OTB Podcast Network. Up next, as part of the Government's Still Here campaign, we're doing a very special panel on domestic violence. That's up next.
Football on Off the Ball.
With Paddy Power. The greatest football partnership since Jeff and Heskey.